I'm Ryan Stanton here with ASEP Frontline. Today, joined by Dr. Wendy Chang and Dr. Danya Koja, who are here to talk about critical decisions. That's emergency medicine right there. It's critical decisions, making those decisions that are going to be life-changing, limb-sparing, stabilizing, dispositioning, more importantly, dispositioning. So I thank you guys for joining us. And first, let's talk about where you guys hail from, and this then you can roll right into critical decisions, which is more than just a statement.
Thanks for having us, Ryan. I'm Wendy Chang. I'm one of the EM neurointensivists at University of Maryland.
And I'm Danya Koja. I'm one of the EM attendings at University of Maryland as well.
All right. Tell me about it. What is critical decisions for those who don't know and haven't seen it as often as I have?
Well, if you don't know critical decisions, then you need to change that right now. Critical Decisions is a fantastic publication by ASEP. It's actually their official CME publication, and it basically approaches two topics each month, and it looks at the critical decisions that you would think about once you have a patient with this presentation. So, for example, it can vary from things like abdominal pain in the older patient or bread and butter things like alcohol withdrawal. And in addition, it talks about things like your critical EKG, talks about a critical procedure, a critical radiographic finding. So basically it combines very high yield information in one publication.
That's correct. The editorial board for critical decisions in EM really goes through the EM model topics and makes sure that all the topics are covered over the several year time span. So a lot of residencies actually use critical decisions as part of their reading list, but I think this is exactly why it's so high yield, because there's so much information jam-packed in there with clinical pearls that you can use.
With this critical decisions, you mentioned CME, which is always attractive. I mean, everybody likes a little carrot at the end of the stick. But how are you deciding what needs to be out there? We don't want to, have recently with what's been in the news, we don't want to have 47 contiguous issues of critical decisions on opioid overdoses, honestly, we need to make the critical decisions, but we also need to learn about other things as well that are going to present to our emergency departments. How are we deciding what goes in there and what really flips that trigger for something that we need to educate for those critical decisions when people come to the emergency department?
So there's a fantastic editorial board that actually does that for you. What we do actually is that we take each issue and we are now turning it into a podcast. Because we know that with the realities of life, not everybody has time to sit there and read every issue every month. We commute a lot. We don't know. We're overwhelmed by information, whether from Twitter, social media, blogs, other podcasts. And you're trying to figure out, okay, if I have 20 minutes today to sit down and read, what is it that I want to read? And what can I listen to on my short commute? And that is where our podcast is coming in.
Yes, our goal with the podcast is really to highlight the key pearls from the issues of critical decisions, as well as highlight some of the resources. As Danya mentioned, there are more than just the articles in critical decisions. What we find to be very useful are the short segments on procedures, EKGs, talks, etc.
All right, so the Critical Decisions podcast offerings, we're right in before us coming in here was our annals, and there's several podcasts that I listen to kind of an ongoing basis. I think what's awesome about podcasts is reading journals while you're driving is very dangerous, and so that's when I listen to podcasts.
Is that your public health announcement for today?
Yes, don't text and drive, and don't read medical journals while driving. It will turn into a critical decision at some point. And so the podcast, that ability to get that information out there for emergency medicine, actually for any physicians in general, but emergency medicine, because you've got that drive into work, you've got that opportunity to go to the gym or exercise or wherever you coffee shop or wherever you may be, that downtime where you can listen to these things and digest that information. And really, more importantly, my favorite thing is to have experts that really dug into those topics that can summarize it for me because it's a lot easier, a lot less brain power necessary than me actually having to read it and to digest all of that stuff. You can digest it for me and then feed it to me in terms of the highlights that I really need to hear. Where are folks, how can folks listen to that podcast? Where is the access point in order to get it onto their phones and mobile devices? So this is a new podcast that you guys are putting together for Critical Decisions. I know there's several decisions that still need to be made, where it's going to show up. I'm sure it'll be in several of the popular places where So What and ASAP Frontline and Annals are available, so easy access, and of course the CME component as well. Talk to me about, with Critical Decisions, what are some of the things that you guys have seen that have been really responsive topics, things that have been really hot that you've seen that you feel like through the Critical Decisions could be possible game changers, or something that the physicians and providers that are out there tend to either overlook or miss? You know, I feel like that emergency physicians, we have to know a little bit about a lot of different things. And when we go to our oral boards, one of the big things are those critical decisions that you have to make. You know, it may be as easy as making sure that you give that tetanus shot when the patient comes in with a laceration or whatnot. But there are those critical decisions that you have to have when you come in there. But in real life, we're talking about health and patients and real folks and real potential complications and things like that. What are some of the things that you see that tend to rise up to the top of critical decisions in terms of potential traps out there that we need to make sure that we are aware of?
So I think one of the great things about the articles that are selected is that it covers everything from your bread and butter to things that are hot topics, as you mentioned. We're not going to be talking about opioids over and over and over again, but there are other things. Like, I'm going to be a biased here. I love geriatric emergencies. So of course, geriatric emergencies are something that we're seeing more often, and unfortunately they have not been taught in residency programs as part of the traditional curriculum. It's starting to show up a lot more. Some people are starting to have more dedicated information and dedicated learning about emergency medicine, about geriatric emergencies, but that doesn't happen often. So it's things like that. It takes simple things like abdominal pain that we all know how to deal with, or I hope that we all know how to deal with, and adds that twist of, okay, well, how about if it's an older patient? It takes a twist of, okay, how can you make your emergency department geriatric friendly, but you're not an administrator. You don't really care about sitting there and going through the nitty-gritty details of admin things. You are not, that's not your interest. You're a doctor. You want to take care of patients. What can you do that makes a difference? And that's, I think, the great part about it, is that it takes those decisions that you can make, those little changes, and it helps you incorporate into your practice rather than going into a 14-page article where you're done and you're like, oh, okay, that was great. I don't know what to do with that.
Geriatrics is a growing and huge area of emergency medicine. We have the aging baby boomer population. I mentioned a few times on the podcast that I had a shift recently that the first three patients had a combined 288 years of experience, meaning they're all three over age 90. At the same time in the emergency department, I constantly have over age 85, whereas when I was resident and when I had the initial hospitals, that would be incredibly unusual. And basically, if you came into the ER at over age 85, you were an automatic admission to the hospital because you were old and bad things happen to old people. And honestly, you're just closer to the finish line. So statistically, a bad outcome is more likely just because you're getting close to the end. Anywho. And so it is something that we're going to have to talk about, something we're going to have to address in terms of these, as we call it, the gray-haired tidal wave that's coming our way. And, you know, eventually, you know, we're all going to be part of that wave. But that greatest generation and the generations thereafter, the baby boomers, as they come through with their unique issues, the complications associated with the chronic medical conditions on top of the medications that they're taking, on top of the usual stuff that tends to happen to folks, is going to be something that we're going to have to address. I mean, from things as simple as beds that are safe to keep folks from becoming entangled. We have all these wires all over the beds becoming entangled, also, which makes delirium and agitation worse, also also the fall risks. And nobody has nice, comfy, soft floors in their hospital and emergency rooms. It's, you know, hard tile on top of concrete slabs. So those types of things are things to think about. It's simple things that we can do to keep our patients safe and healthy and move forward in terms of geriatric medicine. So, all right, now you're on the spot. First, you kind of shrugged. I don't know what the hot topic is going to be that I'm worried about. So we stalled a little bit on your behalf, and you're up now.
Let me guess. Wendy's going to be talking about neuro.
What else, right? It comes from the other half of my job as a neurointensivist. So obviously, one of my interests is making neuro easily digestible for EM physicians. And so, you know, I think a lot of what I do is taking calls from our community physicians regarding transfers of these patients to our academic center. And a lot of times I'm trying to tease out the patient's situation over the phone. And a lot of my education has been focused on trying to give them key pieces of skills that they can use in relaying that information so that we can communicate about the patient more consistently.
Well, we're going to have, coming up very soon, Wendy and Danya are going to have their podcast out there. It may even be before this gets released, considering how many we put together here at ASAP 17, or depending how long it takes you guys to put it together and get it online. So look out for it. Critical decisions. I mean, we're looking for the opportunity in emergency medicine on how to get access to information, education, procedures. And just like emergency medicine, we don't like the, in many ways, our personalities don't function well towards the National Geographic style of very long form things. There are people that love to read those research articles, but for most of us, like myself, we like short, concise, summed up bullet points and highlights and basically the Cliff Notes versions. And critical decisions not only pulls together a lot of that thing, those things, but also then puts it in scenarios and throws those curveballs of things. But, you know, this person comes in. Well, it's easy when you're talking about a 25-year-old at right lower quadrant abdominal pain, but then maybe you need to throw in a curveball like potentially pregnancy or something like that that's going to make you make more difficult decisions, that's going to make you think a little bit differently and look for alternatives and what should we do. And I think those are things that can benefit us in emergency medicine as we move forward, getting those things together. So what other things have I missed when it comes to critical decisions and your viewpoint of getting into this podcasting and summaries and that sort of thing when it comes to this publication?
So I think it's just basically another great resource that's out there. Take a look at the publication, listen to our podcasts when it comes out, and I'm going to be totally making a shameless plug right here. Follow us on social media. Both Wendy and I are rather active on social media. We're going to be tweeting about the Critical Decisions podcast. We're going to be tweeting about other educational pearls in both of our interests, which are medical education, neurology, geriatrics, and just generally emergency medicine.
All right, let's hear them. What are, if folks want more information or they want to follow along via, of course, here, ASAP, I've always had to ask about email addresses because it's only been the last couple of years that people have really started to pick up social media. You know, you go to the SMAC conferences with SmackDub and .smack, everybody's social media, so you don't ask for emails, but you guys are going to be, you guys have that that access and that activity on social media. How can folks follow along and catch up with you on social media to get that information? What are those awesome handles you have?
So my handle is boring. Actually, it is my name. It is Danya Khoja, DanyaKhoujah. Pretty boring.
My handle is my interest, so it's EM_NCC for neurocritical care.
So EM_NCC, as well as then the traditional physician style of at your name for Danya Khoja. So,
it's okay. You can make fun of my Twitter handle. What's yours?
Mine is at Everyday Med, so for Everyday Medicine. And so there you go. See, I had my name for a while, but unfortunately, there's another Ryan A. Stanton that's a physician who's a plastic surgeon who does TV stuff, and so a lot of our things get combined out there, and folks are calling, and you know, they're saying, aren't you an emergency physician? Yes. Well, how are you doing breast augmentation and vaginoplasty in the emergency department? I'm like, I don't know. That sounds illegal and possibly a little bit creepy. So, but that is not me. So I had to go with a handle that kind of separated a little bit. And at Everyday Med has been the way to go for that. My name is still on there and you still get a picture, but I'm not near as exciting as the plastic surgeon from Beverly Hills who does breast augmentation, butt lifts, and vaginoplasty. So, sorry, I'm not that exciting. I'm just a simple ER physician from Lexington, Kentucky, just trying to make my way and learn cool ways to do things like critical decisions. And for contacting me, we mentioned it already, at Everyday Med on Twitter. You can also email me if you have any comments or thoughts, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com. And ladies, thank you very much. I look forward to adding your podcast to the cadre of those that I like to listen to on my way to work, home from work, and at the gym to help me and make me a better emergency physician.
Well, thank you for having us.
All right, until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASAP Frontline.